In Haiti was I born as a slave. More than 150 years in the past, with a power I do not fully understand. I am known as Jean-Pierre Desperrois, and Destiny, she calls my name. Chapter 2. De Mariage Loi. Bois Caïmon, the forest of the alligator. You remember, do you not, through the fog of forgetting that has come between us since the last time we have met? Bois Caïmon, and the gathering of slaves around the single tree in the clearing that rises from earth to heaven, the Potomitain. It is night, and an old woman, Ezélie Danto, my maman, as large with a bébé as a woman can be before she brings him into the world, has risen from the ground, and she stands very still in the middle of a circle of mambo, unga, and drummers. There is the smoke of gunpowder now burned around her, and she speaks. She is no longer my maman, but a cheval, to be ridden by the loi. And the voice that speaks is no longer hers, but instead it is the voice of a man.
Why have you summoned me?
Says the voice coming from my maman. The airs of the gunpowder veve and the clarin that those in attendance have been drinking make it very difficult to see our person. Or perhaps it is no longer her, but the form of a powerful loi. It is impossible to tell. The drummers continue their frantic drumming. Mambo Mayonnaise answers the voice.
We have brought you here because we need your help, Great One.
But of course you did,
says the creature that has possessed my maman. It begins to laugh, a laugh to cheer the bones of the living and of the dead. The voice too big for the woman through whom it speaks.
Tell me something I do not know.
Mademoiselle Danto is quite ill. It has been prophesied that her son will lead all Haiti to freedom. She must live through the birth.
Who has prophesied this?
We read it in the blood of a sacrifice. But her age alone is a sign.
De Loi laughs, its laugh of coldness. No one laughs with him. No one knows why he laughs.
Who is the father?
Her master, Pierre Delacour.
My maman, the cheval, the body of the Loi, closes her eyes and the smoke of the now burned out veve swirls around her. It takes the form of a picture, a moving picture of light and smoke and shadow. Within the swirling mass, there appear two figures. The drummers, they have ceased to drum. There is no sound. Even the crickets, they have stopped their chirping. The two figures are my maman and a master, Pierre Delacour. He is known among the slaves as a man of much cruelness among men of much cruelness. The slaves, they fear him. They hate him. He owns more than 500 souls whom he barely houses and clothes and feeds. Why bother? It will not be long before the work in the fields makes each one to fall sick and to die. The shadow of my maman is backing away from Delacour, her arms held up to protect herself from him. She looks so much younger than she is now, and he does too. He appears to be laughing as he approaches her. She backs into a table of some kind. She opens her mouth to scream, but his hand is over her mouth, and his other hand is already pulling her skirt up, up, up. With one knee, he forces her legs to open, and then he presses himself against her. She is pinned to the table behind her. My maman struggles, but it is no use against this man. Division. It dissolves into smoke. De Loi opened the eyes of my maman and continues.
He did that, yes, many times, but so long ago, and he did not do this.
The hand of my maman robs her belly. The air, it is now filled with electricity. Though it is quite hot, each member of this small group feels a chill, no? What de Loi says can only mean one thing. Again, the mouth of my mama moves, and the voice of the Loi speaks.
His mama took 5 days to prepare the coupoudre. She came to me at the crossroads. 3 days and 3 nights she laid there while I had her.
I do not know how long the silence it lasted. But finally the mambo, she breaks it. Although she whispers, her voice, it is loud.
What do you mean she came to you at the crossroads?
Your world is obscure to me. She came to mine. In my world, she is still young.
How?
Mayane truly does not understand this. No person has ever traveled to the city of Ife and come back alive. The Loi responds with its cold, cold laugh. All the people present here in this place, they stare with mouths open.
Tonight, this woman shall give birth to my son. He shall not lead you to freedom. Your freedom is already upon you.
What then is his destiny?
There is a rustling in the trees.
I grow tired of this conversation.
Who are you, Loi?
Asked the mambo. A scream emanates from the trees above us. Not one voice, but 100, 1,000. There is no time to respond. As the group looks up, a cloud of raven. They fall upon the people below their talon. They rend the flesh. A blinding flash of light. The cry of a newborn baby. The sun to the canopy of trees. It is morning. One by one, the eyes of each member of the secret group of slaves, they flutter open, and the slaves, they slowly push themselves up from the ground, shaking their heads to clear them from the vision of the night before. Perhaps it was just the clarin, no? Perhaps just a dream. But no, a bébé, it is crying. Mambo Mayane, now alert, walks quickly toward my mama, who lies unmoving on the ground. My cries, they grow louder. She picks me up from between the legs of my mama as I gasp my first breath of air. Undisturbed on the ground, in the burnt veve of the Diable Trois Loi Legba. My mama, she does not move. Again. Back through the crossroads and back to my apartment. My kubasa is in my hand, serrated blade toward my unseen opponent. Too late. I feel small arms to grab me across the chest. These arms are trying to tackle me. I grab his arm, flip him away from me, and he's on his back, my knee on his sternum, my knife at his throat. I press it just hard enough to cut through one thin layer of his skin. He is tense, but he does not struggle. It takes more than that to scare a man like me. Who are you? My eyes have not yet adjusted to the darkness. I can barely see him as he answers me.
Mackendall!
I loosen my grip a little, not quite believing my ears. Who did you say?
Mackendall! Mackendall! Mackendall, send me, monsieur. I'm just a messenger. Do not kill me, s'il vous plaît. I beg you, do not kill me.
I press the knife against his throat to get him to shut up. I draw blood. His body goes slack. I need a moment to think. Mackendall is a name I have not heard in a long time. This Mackendall, tell me about him.
I do not know him.
My eyes are beginning to adjust to the light. The person underneath me is a black African man, a small one. My baka, the copper pendant around my neck, dangles in his face. I tuck it back into my shirt. As my hand moves the baka, the man, he tries to strike me. but my hand is faster than his, and I slam his wrist against the floor. That was stupid. Do not be stupid again.
Please don't hurt me,
he says. I can't help but laugh. This man is like a twig. I put my nose to his nose. This Machendahl. Surely you know the man who sent you to ransack my home and attack me if I interrupted you, eh? I say. I hold a knife where he can see it.
Please, I don't know. Please don't hurt me.
There is a time to get upset, and there is a time to be reasonable. The man is under my knee with a knife at his neck. Now is a perfect time to be reasonable, no? Who are you, then?
No one.
No one is no one. Your name?
Pierre-Georges Picot.
And you work for this Machendahl?
No. I mean, yes. I mean, I don't know. I work for no one. I am out of work.
No? Yes? Do not toy with me.
I have been out of work. Machendahl hired me today.
Tell me how you encountered Machendahl, then.
I have never encountered him.
I pressed the edge of my knife harder. A trickle of blood.
I received a package. It was delivered to me. A package with money and a note. That's all.
A note?
It had your address. It said to get your attention. It said to take nothing but to get your attention. It was signed Machendahl.
Why?
The note did not say.
How much did he pay you?
He promises gold. Half in advance, half after. I do not recognize the coins he gives me.
Gold coins?
Oui, monsieur.
Let me see.
I do not have them on me.
You would leave gold behind for someone to find it?
Safer to hide it than to have it on my person. Some neighborhoods are not so safe in this city.
He has a good point. He must have a good hiding place, too. What neighborhood? I say. He does not answer. I press metal against flesh. What neighborhood?
Galouche Town.
Galouche Town? But of course, from where else would this scum come? I know a man there. I will check on it later. How did Machendahl find you? Why you?
I do not know.
Have you ever done anything like this before? Wrecked a man's home?
No, never.
Why did you take the job then?
Because the note said if I didn't do it, he would find me and kill me.
Which is why you didn't take the first half of the money and run, eh? This man is like a cockroach. There are thousands like him, useless. I said just kill him and put him out of his misery. But perhaps there is another way, a better way. There is something you must do, I tell him, if you do not want me to kill you.
Yes, anything, anything.
The moment you get the final payment, you must come to me. I want to see the entire package, all the content, including the gold coins. Bring the gold coins he has already given you, too. Do you understand?
Yes, yes, I understand.
The packaging itself, too, no?
Oui, yes, everything, I understand.
I remove my knee from his sternum and my knife from his neck. You may go. He bows to me.
Thank you, thank you.
Do not thank me. Go. He runs from me as fast as his skinny legs can carry him. I am alone with the wreckage of my apartment. I look around. What a mess, huh? I laugh to myself because what else can I do at this time? Do I spend the night in my own place or rent a room somewhere else? Or perhaps to knock on the door of the apartment of Gada? But it is 2 a.m. and I know Gada well enough to know she would not appreciate such a call at such an hour. Perhaps I know this from past experience, eh? I choose to stay and to clean. Machendahl, the poisoner. But say impossible. Machendahl died in AT and the past nearly 200 years. Who then is this person who calls himself Machendahl? And what does he want from me? It is night still, but now there is a heavy fog that glows from the light of a full moon. I am in a forest, but it is a different forest. Before me, a black wolf. It devours meat and blood. Its jaws and teeth, they rend the flesh. The sound of the muscle tearing It is like the sound of wet denim being ripped. I am standing perhaps 15 feet from this wolf. It does not see me, but it will smell me if I do not make my escape. I look for a route through which to run, but behind me crouch two more black wolves. They look ready to jump. The wolf that eats the dead thing in front of me does not seem to notice me. The dead thing, it is not a deer or an antelope. No, it is the body of a man or a woman. It is hard to tell at this point. I feel my last meal start to come up. The wolf, it licks its teeth. Its nose, it twitches. It smells me. It turns its head toward me. The wolves behind me, they take a step forward. I have nowhere to run. Now the wolf in front of me, it looks at me with eyes of blue like ice. I cannot help myself. I am trapped in its gaze, caught in its eyes. Those eyes, they get bigger and bigger before me. I fall into them. Now I am in the ocean. The water, it churns around me. I lift my arms to swim, but they are too heavy to lift. I kick, but my legs, they are bound together. The water, it enters my mouth. I go under the water. I gag on the salt water. It fills my lungs. And I am in my bed in my apartment in Tunis. The mattress, it is soaked with my sweat. Through the window comes the glow of very early morning. My destiny at this moment, she is not so great as the Mambo and Ugan imagined at my birth. My destiny, it appears, is to have the contents of my apartment to be destroyed. Not much of a destiny, eh? It has been several hours since the man who destroyed my apartment, they ran from me. I have twice searched through and organized all my things, but I have found nothing to be missing. If this man was sent to take something from me, it is clear that he did not find it. What he did find, though, was my bila, a simple altar to honor my father. Some old candles, some fabric brightly colored, the foot of a chicken, the skull of a small monkey, nothing out of the ordinary. Certainly nothing that needed to be desecrated, no? Yet this little man, he destroys my father's bila. The scarves are gone, the candles smashed, the skull in pieces. Oh, I can build another, yes, but what this man has done in the name of Magandal, it is sacrilege, both to me and to my father. This man shall pay. This man, this agent of wrongness, told me he was sent merely to get my attention. Now, he has it. This Magandal for whom he works has it too. The thought of all that makes me to be very angry. And it makes me to be tired. But I cannot go back to sleep now. There is much to be done. Through the opening of my front door, the light of the rising sun, it makes the outlines of the buildings across the alley from my apartment to be black silhouette. Wait. There is something on the floor of the balcony just beyond the threshold of the door. Something white, like spilled milk. But it does not reflect light like liquid wood. More like a drawing made with chalk or with a drizzling of fine powder. I walk closer to get a clearer look. There it is. It is there, but how is this possible? With the light bulbs outside smashed, I did not see it as I entered my apartment last night. But now, in the light of the new dawn, there it is, plain as day. Drawn with white powder. It has barely been scuffed by my shoes or the shoes of my intruder. The vevey of the destroying sword of Saint-Michel. I kneel down. I lick my finger, and I touch it to the powder. The powder, it is more like grains of sand than the flour that is milled for the baking of bread or the powder of chalk. I touch my finger to my tongue. I cannot help but smile a little, huh? salt. Macandal, the destroying sword. Too much of a coincidence to be a coincidence, no? Perhaps now it is time to get some answers. Luckily for me, an unopened bottle of rum has survived the damage. I take it, and I do not even bother to lock the door of my apartment behind me. Kalushtown, where the most poor of the black African and Tunis live. It is not much of a town in truth. Just a few square blocks of wood and mud tenements near to the docks. The men here, like Pierre-Georges Picot, they either work the docks or they do not work at all. The women here, they work the streets or they do not work at all. The children here, well, let's just say that I am glad to not be a child living here. The buildings in Kalushtown are so close together that people must walk in a line, how do you say, single file, to get through. The buildings are all 3 stories tall, but I do not know which is to be more dangerous, to live on the top and risk the fall when the building collapses, or to live under and to be crushed when that happens. Better not to live here at all. But I repeat myself. There is no running water in this place. There is no sewer system either, so the stink that I smell is the smell one smells when one smells the smell of human waste. The tiny alleys are heavy with it, and now my shoes are too. In Tunis, like in Haiti, where I was born, the white man is king, but here, unlike in Haiti, the people with skin of color here, they come from many different places, yeah? Perhaps the white man does not know the difference. I doubt that he does, but the black man knows. And like the white man, the black man is not afraid to judge a man whom he sees as less than him, no? For me, I am not of a tribe of Africa. I am from Haiti. The black man here, they do not know what to make of me. I am neither friend nor family with these people. But I am also not a victim of their scorn, nor am I their enemy, unlike, say, the Tutsi and the Hutu, or the Shiite and the Sunni. Not so for the blacks who live in Kalushtown. They are Kalush, the lowest of the low. They are the judged. They will always be the judged. They will never be the judge. So they are stuck in this place where the street and the sewer are one and the same, and to live above it is to risk la mort. I am looking for the apartment of Gatete Omondi, a man who used to work for me. I am certain I had a good reason to, how do you say, terminate his employment, though I cannot remember it now. It was some time ago. We were young. We did not know what we were doing, eh? And there have been many since that time. I am hoping that he has forgotten, too. I pass a beggar sitting in the muck in the street. He wears nothing but a ripped cloth around his waist. He reaches his hand to me. He speaks a language I do not know. I turn the corner. 3 children chase each other, laughing and splashing in the water that runs down the street. I would pull them away, but I do not want to touch their skin now that it is wet from their playing. It is best to move with much quickness, no? It is no wonder that I do not often come to this place. The sooner I am done with Gatete, the sooner I can leave this place behind. I enter the narrow opening that passes for a door in one of the buildings and make my way up the staircase, walking carefully because I do not want any of the steps to break under my weight. He lived in one of the small rooms on the 2nd floor when he worked for me. I hope he still lives here now. This is a dangerous place to be knocking on a door to an apartment of a man you do not know. This is his door, or it used to be. I knock. There is no answer. I knock again. 3 times. Loud. The voice inside. I recognize it. This is the voice of Getete. I have not heard this voice in a long time, but there is no voice that sounds like this voice. At least I got that part right, eh? This voice. It says,
go away.
Getete! It's Jean-Pierre Desperois. May I have a moment of your time, please?
Did you not hear me?
Said the voice on the other side of the door.
I said, go away.
It will only take a minute.
Go away, asshole.
I will not. I will sit here until you let me in, or until you come out. Either way, you will have to talk to me, so why not get it over with, no?
A creak of a spring on the other side of the thin door. He gets up from his bed. 3 footsteps. A lock is turned. The door, it opens.
Getete, like me, is a big man.
Not the kind of man you would like to encounter in a dark alley, if you understand my meaning. His head, it is shaved. He has 2 large brass earrings through the lobe of his left ear. He wears green trousers that are very dirty and held up by a belt made from rope. He wears no shoes. But it is the gun in his hand that draws my attention. A 7-shot Stermannlicher automatic. It is an unusual gun. I wonder where he got it.
Desperois, I should kill you now.
So he does remember. I hold out the bottle of rum. This is for you, an offering of peace, huh?
He looks at me with eyes of wariness and keeps the gun pointed at me.
Come in, old friend. Come in,
he says. I enter. He locks the door behind me. He pulls back the hammer of the gun.
You have been listening to Salt, The Lives and Times of Jean-Pierre Desperois. I'm Jason Newlander, and I wrote and narrated the story. Buzz Moran and Donna Uribe provided additional voices. Buzz also produced this recording. Music by Adrian Quesada. There's more to Jean-Pierre Desperois at theintergalacticnemesis.com. Salt is part of the One of Us podcast network.